Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Beat Elite. I was introduced to Beat Elite by Amelia Boone ahead of the Spartan World Championships in Tahoe in 2017 due to the benefit of Beats when at altitude. I had been looking for a Beat product that had a good taste and have loved Beat Elite's powder mix ever since. Beats can enhance muscle efficiency by reducing the oxygen cost of exercise, essentially making it easier to work harder. Talk about being efficient. They've even done a clinical trial on their product with interval training in cyclists and found an 18% increase in potential duration. Try Beat Elite yourself to experience the benefits of Beat-powered performance. Take 20% off all Beat Elite products at humann.com/beatelite. That's human with an extra n.com/beatelite with the code FTLR. Welcome back. Today I have Amelia Boone joining me for episode 2 of her journey on For the Long Run. So Amelia, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. I hope people aren't too annoyed that it's like been, you know, I'm back. Can't get rid of me.
So for those who don't know who you are, who is Amelia Boone?
Oh, that's such a loaded question. Because it's like, how do you describe yourself? Who am I? I am, let's see. Well, I am not currently wearing a flamingo suit like the last time that we talked, which is really sad, though I should have put it on just for this. But yeah, I am an ultra runner. I'm an attorney. I'm an obstacle racer. I'm just a cool person that's now living in Colorado. Yeah, that's pretty much
it. Yes, you are now living in Colorado. To be determined if you're a cool person. We'll get into that on this podcast. So the reason I wanted to have you back on is, or there are many reasons, but your presence has been requested by quite a few people for being a return guest. And I'm particularly excited to dive into this here with you today because as you and I have talked about, you know, at length, this year has been wildly unexpected for you and me and most people. But it's been interesting and really cool to see how you've sort of adapted to all of these changes and have sort of weathered everything that's been thrown at you. And I'll roll it back a little bit. The last time we had this conversation, we were in Austin, Texas. I think I had just eaten about 10 pounds of barbecue, and it was a beautifully sunny day in Austin, Texas. Early December. Today we are, it's now August, and you're in Colorado. So let's talk, let's start from that.
Yeah. I mean, so it's funny because so much, I mean, the entire world has changed in the past 6 months. But I think actually when we talked in Austin, I was just, I think the following week was when I put into motion my eventual exodus to Colorado, from California, from the Bay Area. And, I had been in the Bay for 5 years, and the Bay Area is great. It really is. But I think for me, the thing that was keeping me there was my job, was working for Apple, was being an attorney there. And I loved that and I didn't want to give it up. But I also felt like there was something missing in my life. Like the Bay Area never really felt like home to me. And perhaps that was partially my fault, you know, for not making a huge effort when I moved there. But it just never felt right. So I put the wheels in motion to, then be able to move to Colorado, stay with Apple, like just find a place that was more what I was searching for in terms of values and my life. And I think that process was set into motion, last year when I was in eating disorder treatment. We worked a lot with, ACT therapy, which is, I'm forgetting what it's like acceptance, compassion. I don't know. No, I'm making it up. But ACT therapy, which is talking about living life according to your values. And I realized that so much of, you know, what I valued in life was connection, was community. And so I needed to make changes to figure out how to like be in a better place with that. So this has been kind of a year-long process and the culmination of heading out here and really kind of easing into a new community. Granted, it's been kind of a bumpy road with a global pandemic, but it's been a journey. It's been definitely a ride for sure.
And you've had some ups and downs on that ride. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone is kind of pandemic out now. I think I just use pandemic as a verb. And so it's like, I don't want to like rehash all of that. But when everything kind of started in January, I started to definitely get into, I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was very young, way before the eating disorder. So probably when I was like 7 or 8 years old. And all of the old things that I thought I had moved past, you know, all of the old obsessions and the rituals, they started to flare really badly. And I felt absolutely crazy, like bonkers, because nobody at this time, nobody else was panicking. It was me. I was the only one panicking. It took me a while to work through that. And then at the same time, all of the support structure that I had built around myself for eating disorder recovery started to also crumble in terms of things that I would do on a daily basis to make sure that I was strong in recovery, which was eating with other people, going out to restaurants a lot, exposing myself to different kinds of food, on a daily basis. All of a sudden there were food shortages at grocery stores. Like I remember walking up and down the aisles, like completely empty shelves and starting to have panic attacks and then not being able to eat out at restaurants, not being able to be with other people. And so it really just was all of a sudden this like confluence of events that came together that I was like, I am living my worst nightmare right now. Everything and just the anxiety was so high. And I didn't know really at that time how to get through it because I was coming, like when we talked in December, I probably was like the highest point, like the happiest that I have been in a really long time and the most like confident and self-assured and knowing where I'm going. And then within 3 or 4 months, I just felt like I was back at ground zero.
What did you draw on when you noticed that you were, as you said, back at ground zero? Are there lessons that you learned from therapy? Are there lessons that you learned from running? What did you pull on?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because I think I tried to pull on my support system as much as I could, but also just this kind of faith in myself that I can ride this out, like that it will change, and that nothing is permanent, that these feelings aren't permanent. And knowing myself, and I think also throwing in a move across country that was already scheduled and then everything else, like I've just never really adapted really well to change. And so it was actually just really telling myself, just sit with this and you'll get through it. And it's going to be really uncomfortable during that time, you know, like it's going to be really, really uncomfortable. And I was an anxious mess and I was totally detached from everything. I couldn't engage in life. But I think what I didn't realize at that time, and now I see it now in hindsight, was that what I was trying to do was to cope in a crazy world without resorting back to my familiar coping mechanism. Because it's so easy for me to revert to restricting food or manipulating food to be able to numb out scary emotions, you know? And it's very much like people who struggle with addiction as well. Like when things get hard, you want to go towards your coping mechanism. And so not being able to do that, or just not allowing myself to do that, definitely I didn't understand how hard that would be. But I also kind of understood that it would get easier at some point. I just couldn't predict what that timeline was going to be. I couldn't be like, okay, in 2 weeks, I'm going to get over all of this. I'm going to be back to normal, you know? And it ended up taking about 2 months for me to kind of really settle in and understand what was going on, understand, you know, what I was doing and why I was struggling so badly, like emotionally and mentally in my head.
Yeah, I think the acknowledgement that this is hard right now and this sucks right now is important. It's like you don't want to brush that off and push it away sometimes. I remember the conversation we had. I was driving to the Cape, so it was in April, and you were driving either to Colorado or to the Bay Area.
I think I was driving back to California. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you took up the majority of my drive, and I took up like a tenth of yours. but I remember, I remember us talking about, like, we were both pretty confused with what was going on. I was driving thinking like, oh, I'm going to do this for 2 weeks and then, you know, go back home. And you were, you know, settling into a wildly new and unexpected move and change and all that. And it was just fascinating to have that conversation where neither of us knew what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that it's interesting because it's so helpful to know that other people are like, and we all have, it's all in different ways, clearly. But like, I remember on that drive, that was a 20-hour drive back to the Bay Area. I think I talked to more friends on that drive than I've talked to in the past, like 10 years on the phone, because I think for me, a great thing out of this is that it made me realize how important connection was when it's cut off from you in person. You know, you try and find other ways. And so that was like super helpful for me.
Definitely.
Sure.
So switching gears a little bit, let's talk about Colorado, my favorite state.
I know. What's your 10-year plan to move here, right?
Exactly. It's not a 10-year plan.
2.5.
Yeah, something like that. Why? Brad wants to know, why is Colorado the best?
Why is Colorado the best?
Emphasis on rad.
On rad. I know. Brad lives down the road from me, actually. And I see him on the trails. You know, when I moved out here, and actually like when I decided on Golden and when I first came out and visited, it was just kind of this peace, this feeling that I was like, this is home. Like it instantly just felt right. And I think for me, it's clearly the trails, you know, the scenery, the mountains, the access, the people are so incredible. And I just feel like I feel a lot more in common with the people around me than I ever have in like any other location that I've lived. And it's fun. I enjoy having weather again. I love afternoon thunderstorms, you know, and I'm actually looking forward to the winter. Everybody says that I'm going to hate it, but I say, hey, I survived 6 Chicago winters. This is, I'll be good. You know, but I really just think that even with the fact that I couldn't really see anyone, like when I first initially even got here, I felt the presence and I felt people welcoming me in. And that was massive for me.
That's awesome. What's been the best surprise since moving?
The best surprise?
Besides having Addie like within 15 minutes of you at all times, which I guess is not a surprise.
No, I know. It's not a surprise. You know, I think the thing, you know, what has actually surprised me the most is that the altitude, God, this is going to be famous last words. The altitude has not affected me as much as I feared it would in terms of running. You know,
it must be all the beets you eat.
I was going to say, it's, I, you know, I have to say, like, I do the thing with the like, so everybody knows that I'm clearly, I work with Beet Elite as a company, but let me tell you, beets and nitric oxide and like for oxygen, you know, like for better, I'm not saying this right, but I'm just super excited about it. But
oxygen transfer and delivery.
There we go. It helps so much here at altitude, as I've realized. But they actually have never done like clinical trials on that. So you can't actually like say that beets help with altitude, but anecdotally I have noticed. So.
Well, it's funny. it's funny we got here. I didn't anticipate it to go here, but the sponsor of this episode will be Beet Elite, and you connected me to them a couple years ago. And my first experience with them was in Tahoe, and so I ate beets and felt great. but again, that aside, it's funny that's been your experience with altitude. I saw you were up at 14,000 feet. Was it the same up there or what?
Oh, I felt awful. No. I mean, it's definitely like I live at 6,000 feet, which is more doable. But I have noticed anytime I go up, especially above 10, I mean, I don't get it. You know, like I was running with like Ashley Brassavan, and she's like trucking it up a 14er, and I'm like, I'm just gonna eat snacks and bring up the rear. I'm like, maybe I ask, I'm like, when will the high altitude get easier? And people will say never. So I think that's just one of those things. There's just not enough oxygen to go around.
Yes. Switching gears again. So we've talked at length about social media and your use of social media, our use of social media, all that good stuff. The other day I got my first stick to running tweet in a long time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it was from a guy who was replying to, I forget what I was saying, but it was something that I was passionate about, and I got a stick to running. You haven't stuck to running, and you've been pretty outspoken about not sticking to running and uh-huh. talking about things that are important. So how has that experience been for you?
Yeah, I mean, I will be completely honest that I was, when everything in this past, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, and I remember posting about that, and it was interesting. I lost a few thousand followers on social media from that. And as much as it's easy to
just
say,
from one post?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, as much as it's easy to say like, oh, it doesn't matter, you don't want those people following you anyway, like blah, 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 blah. As much as you can say that and you know that internally, I will fully admit that it threw me. It definitely threw me. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why is this happening? I'm not a bad person. Like, just because I'm not, do people really think that I'm that one dimensional? You know, nobody ever told me when I started to talk about eating disorders, like stop talking about eating disorders.
Yeah.
But I think it was actually a really good practice for me because I like sat with that for a few days and kind of like felt, you know, did all the, like felt all the feels about it and tried to figure out like, okay, well, what am I like, what is this really showing me? And honestly, like, you know, after a few days, I was just like, okay, whatever, just life moves on. And if anything, I think it's given me more courage to speak about different things that are more controversial, or that could, well, I don't find Black Lives Matter controversial, but that's me personally, but like to talk about things that are outside of running, because here's the thing, we are not one-dimensional people. I love humans because we are complex. We are multi-layered. Like everyone, I don't care if you live, breathe, eat, sleep running every day. I really hope you have other outside interests and other outside opinions because I really want to know those. You know, like running is cool, but that's not what is the coolest part about humans to me.
Right.
So I actually really appreciate when professional athletes, when people speak up about things and do it in an intelligent and thoughtful way. I really encourage constructive discourse about all things. And I actually, you know, I actually will continue to follow people whose viewpoints I disagree with, as long as they are willing to engage in a, you know, in a constructive manner and it not devolve into ad hominem attacks and things like that.
I think that's so important, because right now many of us exist in our, you know, social media silos, or you know, we have a lot of very similar followers. And so if you're always posting about stuff, it's only those people that are seeing it. And if you're only posting about stuff that everyone agrees with, and we've talked about this before, you know, if everybody agrees with everything you say, you should be taking more risks, or you should be, right, you know, putting yourself out there even more. And so I think it's important to have that type of discourse. And if you can do it in a way that is mutually respectful versus, you know, throwing shit against the wall and flinging it back. But that's a different conversation.
Right.
So have you been able to have those conversations, or are you still sort of searching for the right medium for that?
Yeah, you know, I prefer to have those conversations in person with people, which is clearly difficult right now. This is a motto that I kind of like coined when I was in treatment last year. It was like, there's a time to advocate, there's a time to educate, and then there's a time to get the fuck away, you know? And so it's kind of knowing like where I'm at that day. Do I want to engage in this? Do I want to pick this fight? Or do I just want to back off and take care of myself? Because you can't attend every battle that, and you shouldn't attend every battle that you're invited to. You know, and so I think for me, it's just kind of knowing when I'm feeling feisty enough to dip in and to fight that day, and when I'm just like, nope, just over this, just want to be in my happy little bubble. Because I think at the end of the day, you also have to figure out like where your mental health is in that. Because I definitely, you know, after getting in some like heated discourse with people online, and was noticing it really taking a toll on my mental health. And so I just was like, taking a break, you know, go on a break for a few days. You know, our good friend and third try out of Rest Day Brags, Caroline Burkle, I think every few weeks will just take a social media hiatus for a few days, you know, and just log off completely, delete the app from her phone, and just like recenter herself. And I think that's such a great practice to figure out like what works for you in those, in this scenario right now.
Yeah. And I think that unplugging is super helpful. I've found myself sort of going down the mindless scrolling rabbit hole, mm-hmm. Like in a way that was becoming pretty unhealthy back in March. And I said, I'm deleting Twitter from my phone. I didn't delete it from my phone. I pushed it over a couple of screens.
to make it a little bit harder to access. Yes.
Yeah, to make it harder to access and make me actually think about what I was doing. And so I didn't use it on my phone for 3 days, and I didn't intend to have a set time or duration that I would be off of it. But 3 days for me was like the hard reset that I needed. And I never had taken a break like that before from Twitter. And it was super helpful. I've been talking with Dorothy Beal about my experience sort of like falling down that rabbit hole, I guess you could say. And it was like, it was not bringing me to a good place. And I was finally acknowledging that. And then I took action on it. And then 3 days later, when somebody saw me back on Twitter, they're like, oh, nice long break, huh? It's like, well, screw you. Like, this is my choice. I can choose.
Right. And it's also kind of your job too, to be honest,
right.
You know, like it in your other of your many jobs, it is partially one of them. And so, you know, I get that and I understand that. And I think that it's super important for people to check in on that. Cause I've also recognized a pattern in my life that when I hate the term happy versus unhappy with life, but I guess, because I would, like, we can go down a rabbit hole. How do you define happiness? But, and should happiness really be the goal?
I might ask you that.
There we go. But when I find that I have more maybe discontent in my life, or I'm searching for something, then I tend to engage with social media more. But when I'm more content with my life, like in real life, I don't feel the pull as much. And so to like go down the rabbit hole. And so that's really, it's kind of an interesting thing for me to note that with how I engage with it. And I think it's the same. Another super useful thing I did was just starting setting time limits a day.
Yeah.
Or like I, you know, when my panic was coming up and I was checking news sites, like I was checking CNN, I was checking New York Times, like every hour, like looking for updates. And so I forced myself, I was able to check the news one time a day, you know, like at 6 p.m. every night, and I could spend 10 minutes on the website, and then that was it, and then move on. So.
Thanks again to Beat Elite for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I have dialed in a combination of sports nutrition products that works very well for me, and Beat Elite has been a part of that for the last 3 years, particularly ahead of workouts, long runs, and whenever I'm headed to altitude. Don't just take my word for it. There's plenty of science on the performance benefits of Beats. Normally, it's hard to get these benefits in an enjoyable and convenient way, but Beat Elite has figured that part out too. Try it for yourself and take 20% off Beat Elite products with the code FTLR on their website, which is human2ns.com/BeatElite. I'll also link to it in the show notes.
So I'm going to go down that rabbit hole that you opened up. How do you define happiness?
No, I don't have an answer to this question.
Well, let's explore it. What does it look like when you are happiest?
So I think it's just this feeling. It's kind of a feeling of just ease, you know. And for me, I think happiness is more kind of almost the absence of like the anxiety and the should-haves, the would-haves, the could-haves. For me, happiness is like the ability to be totally present in that moment. And I'm not, and I've noticed that, like when I am able to just engage with what is going on fully, like around me in that moment, and not start to future trip, not start to like, you know, fuck with what was going on in the past, then that's when I like really just like, I'm just able to exist. And I think that's the most beautiful thing. Yeah. You know, because what is it like what is the quote about suffering is the difference between what you want to be and what is, you know, I'm butchering that, but yeah, it's suffering is like the delta between like what you think should be and what actually is.
Yeah.
And in between that is suffering. And so if you then just focus on what you actually have in that moment, then that's really, really where I find that, you know, where I'm able to be present and able to be engaged. And I've actually found for me that it's so much easier for me to do that when I'm around people and when I'm like with people. I've realized that I'm actually a very social creature. And I never used to think that. And maybe that was part of the eating disorder, me not wanting to be around people for many years. And so I don't know. I've been learning a lot about that.
So it's fascinating that's your definition of happiness and living, and that you're learning that in Colorado. By the same definition, some of the happiest times that I remember from the last few years have been in Boulder or Tahoe or in these places surrounded by many of our mutual friends, and just like living and thriving, being outside and chasing big mountains and running up things and running down things, and like all these things that like make you feel so alive. And it's like I can't put a, like, I feel like that's been the piece that's been missing from my year, at least. Like, I haven't had that since March. And as somebody who travels, you know, as much as you do, maybe a little less, it's been a huge part of my life. And then it was just absolutely taken away.
Yeah. And I think that what I've also noticed is when I started spiraling into, I got into a really dark place when I actually after like in probably in May when I moved out here. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, now what? And I've realized that I have always planned my life around races, around things to look forward to. And that not like, and not that racing is the end all be all, but it's always provided me structure or like kind of the next things to plan for, the next thing to look forward to. And it's also been my social outlet for so long. And understanding that, like, I was feeling very much at sea and at loss, like at a loss, because I didn't know what I was supposed to be looking forward to or what I was supposed to be working towards. Every day felt like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. And so that lack of structure, I've realized around the whole racing thing, is probably ubiquitous to a lot of runners, I think. And like then just trying to find ways to give, I'm a big structure person. So to give myself something to look forward to necessarily without the racing being there, you know?
So what's been the anchor point for you?
For me, it's really been about like, I'm lucky in terms of that in Colorado, there are plenty of places to go adventure on weekends. And so it's funny, like I just moved into a house and I probably really should unpack and, you know, get myself situated. But instead I'm like, well, it's August. We only have like another month before the 14ers are all snowed in. So let's go adventure every weekend instead. And so I think just like finding little things that I can look forward to. And then also, you know, as much as I can, keeping other people, keeping social, you know, in clearly in like a safe way and a controlled way. But just doing that and making sure that I keep reaching out and I don't kind of like devolve into this very solitary existence.
And part of that includes your weekly Elliptigo sessions where you get to wave at all of the friendly cyclists of Boulder, Colorado.
Yes. The Elliptigo has been, I actually adore it because it is, I mean, some people say mean things to me. Other people say super nice things to me, but I love like waving at cyclists all the time. And I actually did just get a gravel bike, a real bike, quote unquote, to then be able, because nobody wants to ride with me on the Elliptigo. Let's be honest. I'm slow on it. So now I'm still slow on a gravel bike, but at least other people will want to ride with me now. Maybe.
I love that. Going back to the other conversation, where you defined happiness, and then you said, should happiness be the goal?
Yeah.
Why'd you say that?
I don't think it should. I think that happiness is such a nebulous term, you know? And I think that everybody says like, well, I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy. Okay. Well, what does that mean to you? And for me, I've realized being happy for me means feeling safe. It means feeling loved. It means feeling like I have a strong support network, like I have people around me. So it's, I think that it's not about this like amorphous goal of the word happy, but more like, what is it that brings you joy? Like, what are those feelings that you crave? And so, and that's what I come back to, you know, that feeling of connection, that feeling of safety, that feeling of security for me. Those are the things that really just bring me peace, you know, and contentment.
So happiness, you could say on its own is sort of like, I don't want to say status quo, but rather joy is, or fulfillment is what you think might be more important.
Yeah, because there are so many things. I mean, maybe this is all just, maybe I'm splicing this down way too much. You know, we're just talking about like verbiage and it's all the same thing. But I do think that people spin themselves, at least I have spun myself into even a worse state when I'm like, oh God, why am I not happy right now? Like I should be happy. And how do I, you know, and just like, and then self-flagellating because because you aren't, or because you don't feel that way. Because as humans, we are not going to be happy all the time. I actually do not trust people who say they are happy 100% of the time. I'd say, okay, no, you have some work to do, because you, I'm sure you have underlying emotions at points that are not happy. It's okay to be angry at times. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be frustrated. Like, those are all like parts of being human. And so I think to say that the ultimate goal is happiness is actually to ignore a very, very big part of who we are as humans, you know, and the emotional roller coaster. And what's actually really funny in these past few months, what I've realized is that I actually not thrive, but I love to see the messy side of humans. Yeah. I love to see the non-polished side. Like, I really dig in when shit gets real. Like, and those are the people that I find myself the most drawn to, the most connected to, you know, and the people who are willing to do the work to understand that, you know.
Do you think that's why ultras are your thing? Land long ultras?
I just said ultras, like the shoes. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, yes, no.
Yeah, no, ultras.
You know, I do. I really do, because I think that it mimics a lot of that. And I've always said that with ultra running, you see the darkest moments in yourself and you see really dark moments in other people. If you've ever spent multiple days racing with somebody or racing with a team, like I back in the day, I used to do like multi-day stuff. And like it's interesting to also watch other people go through their ups and downs. And then to understand that you don't take things personally. Like, if you ever crewed for somebody during a 100-miler, like I always tell them as crew, I'm like, you are welcome to yell at me, to tell me any nasty thing, to just berate me. I don't like whatever you need to do. And I won't hold it against you once the race is over, because I get it, you know, like you're going through things, but I'm here for you for that, you know?
Why are you here? Why do you think you're on this planet?
Oh my God, now we're really getting meta.
Well, I rarely get to go this deep with people. And I feel, I had a conversation with a guy named Lex Gillette, and he's a blind Paralympic long jumper. Mm-hmm. And we had an amazing conversation about like why he thinks he's on this planet. And that conversation was a conversation I had with my grandfather before he passed. And I love it when you can get here with someone. So I'm super curious. Like we were getting to it. So I want to know why do you think?
I mean, for me, I keep coming back to that. My overriding value of everything is connection with other people and connection through support and through being able to give love and receive love and to just be able to like be present with other people, you know? And I think that maybe I'm kind of on this trip now, like why I'm like so into the connection and the community realm, because for so many years I didn't have that because I was scared of it and I didn't want people to see me and I didn't want to be a part of that. And I numbed my way out of that. And now all of a sudden I'm like, man, I missed out on that for 20 years. And I think, and I've now seen how powerful and how meaningful it's been for me when other people have supported me through hard times and when I've been able to, you know, like share with them. And so I, you know, like, look, I clearly have 40 million demons that I am still working on, but I also understand now that I thrive when I'm also able to support and to help others, you know, and to really share together. And that, you know, like, I don't think that there is some grandiose meaning of life. But I do know, I do kind of hold to a feeling of what I want life to feel like. And it is really, it's hard to describe in words, but I think that when you land on it, you kind of know, you know, you're like, yes, this is right. Like, this is what we're supposed to be doing right now, you know?
So my grandfather's answer to that question that he volunteered without me asking was, I want to leave this world a better place than when I came in, and bring those around me on a journey and help them get better. And I feel it's very in line with what you're sharing here. And I think that's like, if we had more of that in the world versus people trying to do everything for themselves, I think we'd be in a much better place. So I think it's super important. And I think that kind of reflection is important, whether it's on a podcast or on a phone or just in your own head. I think that like these are questions that we should be considering. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You're here for X number of years and you have some contribution to give to the world. What is it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you made a point about, you know, helping others and whatnot. And I think that for myself, I always place such a badge of honor on being able to do everything on my own and that I don't need other people, you know, and that if I did need other people, that meant I was needy, you know, and I shouldn't want to ask for help. What I've also realized, and I learned this many years ago, is that people feel good about themselves when they're able to help you, you know, and if you never allow somebody to help you, you're never going to connect to them, you know? And so it's being able to receive help from others is it's a very hard thing. The first time you do it, absolutely. And the first few times, still really hard for me sometimes. I'm like, no, I can move that 600-pound ficus tree by myself. Yes. But, you know, like there is very, it's this, when you look at relationships that are the most meaningful in your lives, I feel like they're very symbiotic of like this kind of like push and pull and give and receive, but it's never with an expectation that the other person is going to like help you in return at some point. It's you give because you want to give and because you love it and you love the person, you know? And I think that that's what we should all strive for.
Totally. I can't remember if I asked you in December, but what would Amelia Boone of 2010 say to Amelia Boone of 2020 and vice versa?
Oh, God. Okay. 2010.
Or 2012. Oh, or 2013.
No, I know. But I'm just trying to think. I think Amelia Boone of 2010 would probably look at me now and say, God, you've gotten soft. to be totally honest, be like, do you remember that life plan that you had and where you were going? Yeah, that definitely didn't happen. And also, you know, like, look at you, like, talking about all your feelings and emotions now. And when I would say back to myself, you know, of 10 years ago, it would really be like, you don't have to, like, you have nothing to prove and you like don't need to do this all on your own. And actually life really sucks when you try and do it all on your own, you know, and that the way that you're seeking fulfillment, the way that you are seeking admiration from people and like, that's not going to be meaningful or long lasting at all.
What would happen if there were no races ever again? What would Amelia Boone do?
I would keep doing the same exact thing that I do every day. Honestly, I am one of those
trying to take over the world.
Yeah. I, as much as I've like, I do not miss racing. I don't. I miss the social aspect to it. I miss like pushing hard and I miss doing that. But I think that's one thing that's been super fulfilling for me these past few months is that I've realized like what I actually really enjoy about running. So the funny thing is I used to never run with people. I was terrified to run with people, mainly because I was always afraid I would slow them down. I remember when I first moved to the Bay Area and Devin Yanko was like super nice and she reached out to me and like took me on a run around Mount Tam and I love Devin. She's still one of great friends to this day. But I remember just being like, I don't think I can run with her. She's going to be like so upset because I'm so slow compared to her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I run with people at least a few times a week now. And I'm like, God, why wasn't I doing this earlier? You know, because I've realized that for me, the running is the social aspect for me. It's the connection. And that, like, I give two shits what pace people are going, you know? And sometimes it's just like starting a run and then meeting back up at the end, and we all go our own paces, that kind of thing. But
yeah,
like,
that's what I love about it. Like, normally I get to travel and I get to run with a lot of pros. And the cool thing about pro runners is that they'll run any pace, and mm-hmm. most runners will go down any pace, not necessarily mm-hmm. go up.
That's a little bit harder, but yes.
Like, I was in Boulder last September, I want to say, and I was going for a run with Matt Daniels, and I was actively nervous about this. It was on a Tuesday, and we were at Walker Ranch, and we ended up running so slow that, like, people thought he was injured on his Strava.
Oh my God.
But that's the thing. It's like, people will do it. And that's what I've learned over the years as well, that, like, that's my absolute favorite part about it. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how do sponsors fit in? Are your sponsors wanting you to race? Are you feeling any pressure? Like, there's a lot happening in Utah these days with yeah. racing. Are you feeling any pressure to race?
I have not heard a peep from a single sponsor about wanting me to race. You know, but I also am fortunate to have fantastic sponsors, and the way that I always structure my contracts with them is very much not around race performances or anything. Like, I don't do race bonuses. I don't do that kind of stuff in my contracts. That's just not the way.
You must have a good attorney.
I know. Well, she's questionable. She's definitely questionable. She doesn't like to advocate for herself very well. I'm super fortunate, you know, and understand in having, like, unconditional support from them. And I think sponsors right now, overall, from what I hear from other runners, they've seemed to be very supportive and understanding, especially everyone has different comfort levels right now, you know, and with what's going on in the world. And I'm personally still not super comfortable flying. And I think for a while I was kind of ashamed to admit that, but now I'm like, no, like, that's just where I'm at, and I'm not going to apologize for it. You know? So if you want me to get on a plane and go to a race, I don't want to do that right now. That's just not where I'm comfortable with, or, like, I'm not comfortable eating at a restaurant right now inside. So I'm just going to say no to that. And if other people are comfortable, cool. But that's just not where I am. So this has actually been a really good practice in me just speaking up for myself and being fully honest about what my comfort level is with everything. And I really hope that more athletes with their sponsors will do that as well, because, like, we all have a lot of at stake here, you know, and you need to, like, kind of dive into what feels right to you, for sure.
Definitely. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap for today. I won't ask you any more questions about the meaning of life or anything like that.
Like, whoa, we weren't expecting this. We were expecting, you know, some, like, running conversations about, like, I don't know, the best trails in Colorado, that stuff. But no,
we could go there too. I've been pitching the Colorado Department of Tourism for. No, ooh. Jokes aside, what are some of your favorite trails?
Oh, man. I mean, where I am in this area, I really love – so I'm around Golden. Centennial Cone in this area is actually one of my favorites. I adore it. But I, like, more and more have been getting up into, like, the higher altitude stuff now. And when I did Four Pass Loop a few weeks ago, that was just ridiculously beautiful. Unfortunately, I'm not quite sure I can find anything as beautiful as that. So I might have, like, started at the top and, like, gonna have to go downhill from here. But hey, that's how I like to roll.
For sure. Actually, one last question. What's your take on FKTs?
Do I support FKTs?
Is it something you're interested in pursuing?
Yeah, you know, I will fully admit FKTs around Colorado are pretty stout. But I think they're fun. You know, I adore them. I think that they give great motivation, you know, for the right reasons. So I definitely, I have a few that I've been looking at, that I've been thinking of doing, probably with like no hope of actually even getting the FKT, but I don't really care. I just want to like run and see beautiful things. And if I happen to like post the fastest time for that, kudos. But otherwise, lots of snacks and photos. So it's a win-win in my book.
Definitely. Well, where can we follow along with your pursuit of big mountains and beautiful views?
And not happiness. not my pursuit of happiness.
I didn't. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Let's see. I am on Twitter at Amelia Boone, Instagram at ARBoone11, and those are the primary. And I'm on Strava now, actually. So that was, I'm a late joiner to Strava. So you can find me there as well and follow along with my Elliptigo rides. So
awesome. Well, Amelia, hope to see you on a mountain again sometime soon somewhere. But until then, I'll be following along and living vicariously through your Instagram.
Awesome.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.